Blog Talk Radio.
Episode of 5 Wide Sports Live at a special time today of 3 p.m. for the start time, Eastern time that is, as well. And I am super excited to be on this show with you guys today as news has just come out reported by Yahoo Sports that Josh Smith, Jay Smoove, is signing with the Pistons for 4 years at $56 million in total to become a Detroit Piston, to bring his Jay Smoove-ness to Motown. So hopefully his smoothness as Jay Smoove will produce some Motown hits for the Pistons this season and over the next 4 years. Lauren Beasley of Lauren Beasley Sports Talk, or Sports Talk with Lauren Beasley on Blog Talk Radio, will be along to discuss NBA free agency, all the latest moves from this offseason, including D12 and his decision to sign with the Houston Rockets instead of the L.A. Lakers and Dallas Mavs and even the Golden State Warriors, which made an attempt to trade away some salary, guys such as Bogut, Beadrins, even Harrison Barnes, to remove cap room and to make a sign-and-trade work with the L.A. Lakers. The L.A. Lakers didn't bite, I guess, and Howard did not want to sign with the Warriors after all, even though that would have been a pretty sick roster and starting five for the Warriors, with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson in the backcourt, and Dwight Howard in the front court. But now D12 is going to Houston, where he'll play with James Harden, the bearded assassin, one of the top 10 probably stars in the game right now, a slasher, a facilitator, a guy that gets it done at the rim and can score the basketball at a premium rate. That is James Harden. Now he has someone to go down low to pass the ball to in the low post, and Howard can get it done down there. Not the most efficient at times, but he grabs boards and gets it done defensively as a rim protector as well. So he brings a lot for that front court for the Rockets. And Kevin McHale, a big man from the Celtics glory days in the 80s, won titles playing alongside Larry Bird and all those guys in Boston. Robert Parrish as well, another big like Kevin McHale. They won many titles, three, I believe, in the 80s. Now McHale is coaching Dwight Howard. hopefully will teach him some more big man moves and lead to Dwight Howard becoming a more all-around offensive presence down low and in the front court. If that happens, he's a true, legitimate superstar then for the Rockets and for years to come. Now, I believe he has some sort of an option where he can get out of the contract. But with the roster and what they have right now surrounding Dwight Howard with shooters such as Francisco Garcia, who they just re-signed today. Shooters like that, and hopefully they bring in other ones as well, surrounding Dwight Howard. And if they do that, the Rockets are a definite playoff team and probably a title contender out of the West. Definitely one of the front runners in the West, a team that can give a challenge to the Spurs and even to the OKC Thunder with a healthy Russell Westbrook. So I believe a good deal for Dwight Howard and the Houston Rockets. He went to the team with the best chance to win at this current state. The Lakers are not in that state right now to win in the immediate future. Kobe Bryant's hurt, banged up, getting older, not getting any younger. Same thing with Paul Gasol. He's an older gentleman now, too. He's not getting any younger. He's probably seen his best days. And I think he started to show that and started to show signs of decline as well the past two and a half seasons now with the Lake Show in L.A. And Steve Nash is a 39-year-old. He's almost 40 now. He's not getting any younger, and he's seen his prime go past him as well. He's no longer in his prime years and no longer an MVP candidate, a guy that won multiple MVPs at once. Back in 06, I know, he beat out Shaq. He's no longer that superstar point guard and great facilitator and floor general. So they need to get younger and need to build for the future now and hopefully shed some salary and probably acquire some draft picks and future assets so they can build and really build for the future, doing it the right way through the draft, acquiring first-rounders, and maybe even tanking it this year to acquire the rights to Andrew Wiggins at the top of next year's draft through the lottery. We'll see if that happens with the Lakers and Kobe Bryant and all those guys in L.A. Definitely, they have to make some moves if they want to come even close to contending. And that's with a healthy Kobe Bryant, too, which isn't going to be the case to start off the season in L.A. Also coming up on the show today will be, should be at least, at 3:05, Lamont Jones, former standout Iona point guard, also went undrafted in this year's draft, but signed or will be playing on the summer league team of the Portland Trail Blazers this year over the summer. So hopefully he'll be joining me very shortly in the next 2 minutes. So hopefully by 3:10 he'll be on the show on today's episode of Five Wide Sports Live. And after he joins the show, after his interview is wrapped up, I'll be joined by the aforementioned Lauren Beasley of Sports Talk with Lauren Beasley on blogtalkradio.com, who will shed some light and some of her insight, her great insight, on some of the latest moves, wheeling and dealing in the NBA over this offseason. Right now, 3:08 Eastern Standard Time, waiting on the call from Lamont Jones, former Iona standout point guard. A guy undersized, went undrafted probably as a result of that, but was the conference player of the year at Iona as a senior. Definitely can score the basketball, probably more of a combo guard, more of a scorer, and more of a two guard than a prototypical point guard. And that's probably his biggest downfall, along with his size, only being 6 feet tall and under 200 pounds. Lots of bigger guards nowadays play in that point guard position in the association. And at the top of the hour, at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, former MLB pitcher C.J. Nikowski will also join the show and shed some light on some of the guys at the All-Star break going into it that have had great first halves to the season, including the likes of Chris Davis. He's really come onto the scene this year. He already has a career high. He's tied it for himself. He did it last year with 33 bombs. He has that mark already. And he has 75 more games to play this season, too. And now he's one RBI behind Miguel Cabrera as well, who won the Triple Crown in the American League for the Tigers, and also the AL MVP last season, too. So he's right there, neck and neck, with Miguel Cabrera of the Detroit Tigers, of my Detroit Tigers guys. So we'll see what Chris Davis does in the second half, if he can keep it up. And I'll ask C.J. Nikowski, former MLB pitcher, a guy who's done some radio, some broadcasting lately, too, and was in the movie 42 about Jackie Robinson. So I'll ask him about Chris Davis's progression, where it's come from, and if he sees further strides being made by Davis in the second half of the season and down the stretch for the O's in 2013. If that's the case, they're in line for some big things in Baltimore this year, in my opinion. With him in the middle of their order, along with Markakis, and then Adam Jones, all those outfielders, realistically speaking. Manny Machado on the infield playing third base, out of position for the O's because they have an all-star at shortstop already in J.J. Hardy, who gets it done with the glove, and in the last year or two has really come along with his bat, too, and his production at the plate out of that shortstop position for the O's. So good production, steady production out of him, out of Machado, who's on pace for a record number of doubles already with his first half production. Tons of extra base power and showing that he can get it done as a third baseman playing the hot corner. Defensively with the glove, but also his production at the plate, putting up not huge power numbers, but gap power, extra base power, and really raking up and collecting doubles left and right for that Orioles team right now. One of the young phenoms. And Mr. Davis, that first baseman of the O's too, who is one of the best players right now in the American League, the second best, I believe, pure slugger in the American League right now, behind only Cabby. And that guy's only 27, 28. He's under 30. Lots of young stars on that Orioles ball club. Now it's about getting that sufficient pitching at the top of the rotation, gaining, acquiring frontline arms. Can they do that at the deadline? If maybe their GM can do that, pull that off at the deadline, they're definitely in for a stretch run in that tough and very balanced and competitive American League East division, which also features the Blue Jays, who had a win streak snapped recently, have struggled since their big 11-game win streak. The Tigers won 3 out of 4 against them, lost on Independence Day in Canada against R.A. Dickey and the Jays, but since then, did it really well. Took 3 out of 4, like I said, against the Jays. Verlander showed up, had a very nice bounce-back start, one of the finest he's had all season long to this point, and he's got to get his act together, be more of an ace-caliber starting pitcher at the front of the Tigers' rotation, along with Max Scherzer, Maxwell, one of the AL strikeout leaders, a strikeout artist, and perhaps the ace of the Tigers' rotation thus far, with 13 wins already on the season to this point, 13-0 to be exact. And now we do have a caller on the line with us from the area code 313. Let's welcome him in. Who do we got today? 313 area code.
This is Lauren Beasley.
Lauren Beasley, thanks for joining me on 5 Wide Sports Live. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. So I bet you saw the move already made by the Pistons, tweeted out by Yahoo Sports, their NBA insider, about Jay's move. Josh Smith from the Atlanta Hawks signing with the Pistons for 4 years at $56 million in total. Your instant reaction to that move by the Pistons? For me, I see it being maybe of a log, kind of a log jam now for the Pistons in the front court, already having, you know, Greg Monroe and Drummond. That's my concern
not,
as a Piston fan.
I mean, I'm not a fan of the move. I said it from the beginning when they first started talking about Josh Smith. I wasn't necessarily a fan of the move because he's not going to play the three. He's primarily going to play at a position of the four, and I feel like you already have a, you know, solid young big man duo in Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond. And I, as I said before, signing him to a big deal when Greg Monroe's contract is almost up, that's somebody I assume they would want to re-sign. So then you have that, then Andre Drummond will be soon after that. So I'm still not a big fan of the deal. I like obviously Josh Smith's athleticism and what he can offer for us defensively. But for me, that wasn't necessarily a move we had to make. I was more a fan of going to get a three and making a move happen there.
Iggy, right?
Because like I said,
about AI.
Could
have been him, right?
Or anybody. I mean, even trying to go maybe go to get a Harrison Barnes now that Iguodala is part of that squad now with the Golden State Warriors, and they're making that move and saying, hey, you know what, let's go maybe see if we can go get Harrison Barnes for somebody. So I'm not a big fan of the move right now. I was never a fan of it when it was just talked. So I'm a little upset right now with the Pistons about this. Like I said, obviously there are some upsides about Josh Smith, but not ultimately considering you already have two young, nice pieces that I felt could truly grow with the Pistons. And then there's been some talk maybe, you know, they're going to try to get Greg Monroe out there, especially because they've made it a point to say they do want Rondo. So some people think, well, maybe Greg Monroe will be trade bait now. Mm-hmm. But I'm still just not a fan of it because personally I like Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond, and I think they could be a nice dynamic duo in the paint.
a young front court, right, to build around for the future. But Monroe is that fundamentals guy. He does a little bit of everything, but nothing great. Where Drummond, I think, offers that supreme athleticism, dunking, highlight ability, like a Blake Griffin, but also rebounding potential. And what he brings on the boards, I think, is really good for the Pistons at that five position. But as you said, Jay Smoove doesn't offer a sufficient starter at the three position. Never really has played it on a consistent, regular basis in his career with the Hawks. Always playing the four. Really good at doing that, too, as a stretch four. Being able to stretch, but also pull up for that mid-range jumper, produce some highlight dunks. And I like his game overall-wise, but it doesn't fit into the scheme of the Pistons as they're currently structured, as you previously noted, Lauren. And that's my biggest concern with this move and all the money they devoted to Jay Smoove, too, over the course of 4 years. Still, in my opinion, though, Lauren, better than the move that they made in the past, such as signing Ben Gordon and Charlie B. Because this guy is an all-star. Definitely an all-star. Not a superstar player, but a guy that can get it done.
Yeah, I mean, I agree this is better than past moves, but, you know, moving forward, you know, like I said, the Pistons are a squad who should be able to make the playoffs this upcoming season with or without a Josh Smith. I felt that as long as they were able to consistently play and Cheeks was able to come in and make a consistent point of getting this team together. But, like I said, you know, it's obviously some things to like about this, but I'm thinking at this point Greg Monroe will be the next name we start hearing out, possibly as trade bait, because at this point it's hard for me to believe he's going to keep Greg, who's an expiring contract, you know, on this squad. And like I said, I know they've made a point to say, hey, we want Rondo, or hey, we want this, or hey, we want this guy. So maybe now they can feel comfortable. If they wanted to maybe go get a Rui Ye, they can say, hey, you know what, we got Greg Monroe, why don't you take this big man? Or hey, we want Rondo. Boston, you guys need a big man. You guys take Greg Monroe, you give us Rondo. So it'll be interesting to just see what moves the Pistons make from here on out, because now Josh Smith is officially going to be part of the Detroit Pistons. I'm just waiting to see now what does that mean moving forward for guys like Greg Monroe, because I'm with you. Andre Drummond is definitely somebody I like who I think they're going to keep, so that's why I think Greg Monroe is probably the next name we'll hear as far as possible trade bait.
I think he is on the trade block now, and if they can make a deal, can pull off a trade for Rondo by dealing Greg Monroe, then you do it, because you have Josh Smith now anyways to play the four, and that's his perfect suited position. He plays the four the best. You need him to play there, and to be a starter after paying him, you know, as much as they are now, Joe D handing out that four-year deal for $56 million in total. He has to be a starting four. Can't start at the three. So then deal Greg Monroe. But can you pull in a guy like Rondo? Is he currently available? And that's the question I have for you. It really does beg the question. Will the Celtics deal him right now after getting a new head man and former Butler head coach Brad Stevens coming from the college ranks, never has dealt with an egotistical maniac like Rondo, who collided with Doc Rivers, an NBA champion, who produced some great seasons with the Celts while he coached the Big Three in Boston. Now Brad Stevens comes in town. How can Rondo realistically respect this guy, a 36-year-old, who's done nothing in the NBA yet?
You know, with Rondo, it's going to be interesting to see what he does. He's already said he has an open mind, but I don't really care much about your open mind. I care the fact that you're ready to go and you're ready to make this team better. And that's the whole thing that I have with Rondo. It's not about you having an open mind. It's about you understanding, look, can this guy help me doing your homework on Brad Stevens and saying, hey, what can I do to make sure that we are a success? And that's always going to be, I think, my problem with Rondo until he at least changes the way he goes about things or he fixes the way that he is, because that's my thing. It doesn't matter what system you're in or what coach you're with. The whole point is you have to ask yourself now as a leader, as a young star in the NBA, you know what, can you help this team get to where we want to be, which is ultimately the playoffs and then back into the championship? Brad Stevens is a great coach. I'm very happy for him that he's got an opportunity to go coach the Celtics. Obviously, some moves are going to have to be made. It's going to be interesting what he does with those pieces, including Rondo, Jeff Green, Jared Sullinger, because those aren't typical guys he's used to having, and he plays a totally different style of basketball compared to a Doc Rivers. But I think Brad can handle it. As I said before, Brad may seem calm and collected, but he's intensely competitive, and he also has a mean streak if you get on his bad side. Now, if Rondo was to be on the Pistons with Cheeks, I'm not sure if Cheeks can handle Rondo, which is another concern I have if we were to make that move.
Well, he's a veteran NBA head coach, though. He has two prior coaching stints in the NBA as a head man. Brad Stevens does not possess that in his coaching track record. So I can Stevens handle it, but not
experience doesn't mean you can handle coaches. True, but, I mean, just because you have experience doesn't mean you can handle attitudes of the NBA. Cliff Saunders is a veteran coach of the NBA. Yeah, he couldn't handle half the egotistical attitudes on the Pistons. So that experience is not necessarily the name of the game. It goes more so, can you command, hey, you know what, this is my team, you're going to run my system, I'm going to make sure that you're going to be okay in the system, that you're going to work well. But I don't necessarily feel comfortable in either coach necessarily having that great type of mentality of Rondo. But a lot of it has to do back to Rondo. Like, so I'm not saying Brad Stevens can completely control it. I'm just saying Brad Stevens is not necessarily as calm and collected as everybody thinks he is at Butler. But with Mochique, I like him. I'm just saying, if you bring in Rondo to that situation, I have to feel comfortable with that, too, that you're bringing in a guy who has the ego and a guy who is ready to play, but a guy who's also going to say a lot and do a lot, and I have to feel comfortable that Mochique, you can handle him and make sure he doesn't become a cancer to the rest of the team. I said the same thing about Jason Kidd when they went and got Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. They're not bad egos, but they're intense egos, and their guys are going to come in and say, hey, this is how we feel, this is how things should be run, and I'm interested in how Jay Kidd will handle that. Like, no, this is my squad, even a Darren Williams or a Joe Johnson. So it's not a battle of who can handle it. It's just, hey, you know what? I want to see what each of you guys can bring to the table and make sure, most importantly, that they don't affect the rest of the young players that you have on your squad, whether it be a Boston, whether it be a Detroit. Because, like I said, you don't want whoever you go get, if we're talking about Rondo, you don't want him to become a cancer. I would like to think Rondo is ready to step up and be that young star and, you know, mature, but I'm not feeling comfortable with that yet so far because I have yet to see it.
Yes, we have to see it get done first. And Brad Stevens has said himself in the press conference, his introductory press conference yesterday for the Celts, he said he wants to coach Rajon Rondo. He wants to try and coexist and make it happen, make the relationship work. And if it does, maybe it will be a great relationship, a great tenure for Brad Stevens in Boston. And maybe Rondo will then remain in Beantown for the remainder of his career as an NBA player. But I say they give it the shot. They see how it works out for the first half of the season. Then after that, depending on the results, how bad they are, where they are in the Eastern Conference, I say they might deal him and pull the trigger on a move for Rajon Rondo at that point in the season. So I believe they give it a shot at this point. They're not going to trade him right now. They're going to see what happens, Lauren. And that's my take on Rajon Rondo and when he's going to be dealt and if he's going to be dealt at all.
Well, I think Rajon Rondo's not going to be immediately dealt. I think they do want to at least try, because he is a young star who I honestly feel like if he just cans the attitude and matures, and, you know, he's a guy who can ultimately be a guy you build a team around. You just have to get more mature. Now he has that option. There is no more KG and whatnot for him to, you know, say, oh, it's not my time. He has that opportunity now to come into this situation and actually say, let me build this team, let me make others around me better, like Crawford, like Green, like Sellinger. So I don't think they're going to immediately can him. I think they're going to look at their options. I think they're going to say, let's see how you feel. If Brad starts saying, or we start hearing problems in practice, you're becoming a cancer, then we're going to get you out of here, because that's just how Danny Ainge is. He's not going to keep somebody here, especially when he has his own plans and own goals. But I think, like you said, they're going to keep Rondo for now, unless they just feel like they get a deal that's too big to pass up, obviously. I think they're going to keep Rondo, and then if it becomes a problem, don't be surprised, you know, come trade deadline, if we actually see him on that big board again.
And I think, as you said, in so many words, they want to build around him for the future. They want him to be that next building block for the future, the key cornerstone piece of that Celtics franchise for the long-term future. Be that KG, that Paul Pierce, that leader of the Boston Celtics squad into the future. And that's why I think they hang on to him and give it a chance, give it a shot, see if it works out between him and Coach Brad Stevens. Then if it does, you keep the guy and you build around him going into the future, like I believe they are in the intention of right now.
Yeah, I agree. They are in
the
intention.
We definitely noted tackle that one. I think we're good with that, aren't we? We're good with the Rajon Rondo topic for right now. And, Lauren, we actually have another caller from the 313 area code on with us right now. Let's welcome him or her into the show. Glad to have you on 5 Wide Sports Live right now with Vito Cirque and Lauren Beasley. Who do we have? 313-778-0839. Who do we got on 5 Wide Sports Live with Lauren Beasley and yours truly? I guess nobody.
Yeah, that's probably just nobody. We can move on to the next topic.
Lauren Beasley, thanks for bringing it so far, and we do have some more topics. First off, Dwight Howard, D12 heading to Houston, choosing the Rockets now over the L.A. Lakers and over a possible sign-and-trade scenario that could have been worked out between the Warriors and the L.A. Lakers as well. What are your thoughts on him going to Houston, and does it set him up for winning a title?
It's going to give him an opportunity to win a title. Is it going to be an automatic title? No, I don't think so. But none of the situations he went to the teams he would have chosen would have gave him an automatic title. Each was going to be a process. I feel like the best process for him, besides maybe a Golden State, where I wasn't a fan of because, to me, you would have had to give up too many key pieces to Golden State to go get Dwight Howard. For me, with the Lakers, that was going to be a process. Lakers are a proven organization. They're going to show you, you know, look, we're going to win a championship. It may not be right now. It may not be next year or even the next season, but trust me, we'll bounce back. That's what we do. With Houston, this is still a new thing, but their thing is, hey, this is your chance to be the guy. You're the guy who can be the star. You and James Harden together, you guys bring in these other pieces. We'll put the necessary pieces around you to succeed. So I feel like those are his best options. Golden State was third. To me, Dallas was just too short. It's a two-year, basically, deal for him if he picks Dallas. It's either you win now, or I say this season, if not next season, and then after that, your window closes because Dirk more than likely.
And all they had was Dirk. That's all they had on that roster to build around along with Dwight. There's nobody else.
That's what I'm basically saying, that they didn't have anybody else to build around. So that's a two-year window. If you don't win in those next 2 years or those next 2 seasons, then you're pretty much done in this case if you're Dwight, and then you'll be demanding a trade. So I understand Dallas is not an option. I said that was out a long time ago. Atlanta was always out of my mind. So it always came down to L.A. and Houston. And Houston, I understand why he doesn't partly want to come back to L.A. I know some L.A. fans are like, oh, come on, he would have won a championship. Dwight Howard is not known for his patience. He also is not a fan of Mike D'Antoni, does not want to be in the system. I don't blame him for that. Like I said, Mike D'Antoni is not used to a big man like Dwight Howard. He's used to an Amari Stoudemire type. He's not even used to a Kobe Bryant. So not wanting to be in that system, not having the patience or the trust maybe in the Lakers to say, yeah, I know eventually you'll win. I know you'll eventually maybe come back in 2014, 2015, even 2017 and probably win again, but I don't have that kind of patience. I don't have that kind of time. I want to go to Houston where I think I can win quicker and do things my way as a whole.
And Houston offers him the best chance to win right now, with the bearded assassin and a top 10 superstar, I think, of a player in the league in James Harden on the perimeter, what he can do scoring the basketball, facilitating the basketball. And now Dwight Howard's that big man that you can throw it down low to in the post, on the low block, and have Dwight get it done for you. You know, dunk it in, or maybe offer the baby hook up and put it in that way for two. So now they got a few options for offense, and now they're trying to support all of what Dwight can offer on the perimeter with more and more shooters, such as Francisco Garcia, who was re-signed today for 2 years at like $2.6 million. A very nice, cheap deal, and hopefully they keep doing that with more and more veterans that can get it done from long distance.
Amari Caspi. They just signed Amari Caspi, actually.
And that's a way to build a sufficient offense with a guy like Dwight down low, who you can obviously feed him when necessary, but also then have him kick it out when he's double-teamed. The shooters in the corner and up top, they can just knock it down from three-point range. And that's what the Rockets are trying to build right now. And that's the best way, in my opinion, to build a team that can win with Dwight Howard on the roster.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I agree with that. Like I said, it's not going to stop with Dwight. Houston still has money to be able to go out and make some moves, just making sure they make the right moves and put the right pieces, and then for that team to go out there and execute. Like I said, I'm not dubbing Houston automatic champions, just like I'm not dubbing Clippers automatic champions or the Brooklyn Nets automatic champions. We'll see once these guys get on the court how they play well together. Like I told people last time, you know, let's see how he reacts again to Houston. A lot of people thought L.A. was going to be great, and I told people, relax, let's see what happens. You know, Dwight is a guy not known for his patience. It's hot and cold one moment. You know, you just got to see how he feels out with the team. But I like to think that Kevin McHale would be also a good fit for him from a head coach perspective, a guy who played in the post, guy who's very physical playing in his Boston years, one of the greats of that Boston squad. So, like I said, I would like to think that's another good move more than anything that I like, even besides him and James being able to do some things and bringing in those other pieces. I also like the fact that he is with Kevin McHale, who I feel like hopefully will be able to help Dwight get to that next level that he's taking his beautiful time in getting to.
And McHale was a legendary Celtic big man, like you said, a great one who can teach Dwight Howard more and more post moves in terms of working on his offense and making him more of an all-around offensive force down low and in the front court for the Rockets. Well, that's another key to that deal, like you said, to him going to the Rockets and joining that current Houston roster as they're currently structured. So a good move, I think, all around in that regard. And as you said with L.A., he didn't like D'Antoni's system, and who can blame him? Look at what D'Antoni's done, his track record as a head coach in the NBA, in the playoffs, his playoff win and loss record. Not that great outside of one Western Conference Finals appearance with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. players that were great in that system, playing in that scheme. The Lakers don't possess those type of players. And Kobe Bryant's not getting any younger, coming off of a major injury at his age. He's not really maybe in the prime anymore, probably reaching the downside of his career. And then also now he wants to play three or four more years when Dwight Howard wants to be the franchise icon of a team, you know, be that leader and be the guy that the team revolves around. Well, in L.A., you're not going to be that. And he already found that out. He didn't mesh with Kobe. So why go through that all over again? And when he couldn't get it done in the bright lights, too, with all the media pressure, he knows it wasn't for him, and he made the smart move not going back to L.A. and resisting the temptation of going there, playing for the Lakers with all that rich tradition, and trying out now a team on the rise in Houston. I believe the right move for the franchise in the Rockets and also the player in Dwight Howard.
I mean that's a fine analysis. I'm not going to make a big deal about Kobe in that whole situation. At the end of the day, Kobe has ring, Kobe has success. You want to be the leader of the team, you haven't earned that right, Dwight. And that's more so, you know, I know everybody's been talking about that with Kobe.
But that was an
Dwight,
influencing,
you know,
factor for Dwight, I think, in choosing a team this offseason
and
in free agency.
And I'm saying that can be fine. That can be your influence. But when you say, I want to be the leader, I want this to be my team, you have to earn that right. You haven't technically earned that right in Houston. You just get it because you're Dwight and you're a high contract guy. You haven't earned the right
kind of
to
my max contract. They put all that cap room to be able to sign him to a max contract. So he is the max player now, right? The top dog on that team because of the max contract.
Yes, but what I'm saying, max contract, in my eyes, the way I look at it is it automatically make you a leader. To me, Dwight Howard hasn't earned the fact to say, hey, you're the leader yet. You haven't shown me leadership moments at all and so far in your career. Mm-hmm. I understand you're young and you're maturing, and that's fine, and I want you to continue maturing. But when you talk about the Lakers and everybody saying, oh, he wanted to be the leader, he wanted to be the guy, in Kobe's mind, you have to earn that like I had to earn that. I didn't come in
winning
with
titles first, right?
Yeah, and not even just winning titles, just the way you go about things, the way you act, the things that you do, the things that you say. Like we said, just like Kobe has an influential part on the Lakers, Dwight, you also have that pool to be able to come in. I'm not saying you could have necessarily just got Mike D'Antoni fired, but to express that to everybody at the Lakers organization, like, look, you want me here? I need the coach that I need and I want. And like I said, test them that way and see if that's going to happen. Like I said, I understand his reasons for leaving L.A. That's fine. Go to Houston. I said four. That was your best option. Your second best option to me was coming back to L.A. and just being patient or go to State. After that, to me, you didn't really have that many options. But when it came down to, like I said, the Kobe and the sidekick and that part, I was more so like, well, Dwight, you have to earn the right in Kobe's mind and in any Laker organization's mind to say, you know what? You got to earn that. Kobe had to earn it. Any other superstar, Magic, had to earn it. You're going to have to earn that leadership moment. We're going to give you
respect,
that opportunity.
Right?
Hmm?
Earn that respect of being a leader.
Earn that respect.
So that on and off the court, Dwight hasn't shown that yet in his career. He's lacking that, big time.
And I hope he shows it at Houston. Like I said, I'm not somebody who's hoping Dwight Howard fails. I could care less. Like I said, at the end of the day, I would love to see him succeed, just like I want to see LeBron get better and continue to become a better leader, and he's done that. And hopefully Houston will provide that, you know, with him being with Kevin McHale and being in that system. But when people keep bringing up the leadership thing and all that, or he doesn't want to be a sidekick, you're only a sidekick if you allow that mindset and you haven't earned the right to be the top dog, which in L.A. he hadn't earned that right, whether it was from a playing standpoint, whether it was from a championship standpoint.
But he wasn't going to while Kobe was there, and if he wants to play three or four more years in L.A., right, he doesn't want to retire yet, wants to play another three, 4 seasons, then you're never going to be that top dog over the duration of your contract. You're going to have to wait way too long until he retires, and then are you willing to wait 3-4 years for that? Dwight wasn't, obviously.
But you don't really know that. That's the whole thing. Kobe said 3-4 years. And like I said, I got a lot of love and respect for Kobe. But he said 3-4 years now. Like we said, he may come back next year, be a totally different Kobe. He may just be like, you know what? I can't do this no more. It's time for me to go. And like I said, LeBron came to a situation with Miami before in a similar same thing. You know what? Come to Miami. Well, you know what? Who's going to be the top dog? Is it going to be Wade? It doesn't. At the end of the day, I want to be the top dog. That's a mindset. What do you want to do? Do you want to win? And like I said, nobody can predict the future. What I would love to see a Kobe in his real, you know, in his prime, still continuing to play for the next 3-4 years. Of course, I would. Because I would enjoy seeing that. But I'm not betting my money on right now the Colts going to be in the league till 2016-2017. I'm just saying we're going to see how he comes back first from the Achilles. I hope he's able to continue playing, because I would like to see him play for as long as he can, as well as he can. But I don't necessarily believe that's going to be 3 to 4 years. Only time will tell with that. But I understand, once again, where he's coming from the mindset of, you know what, this is not, you know, where I want to be. I don't want to be a sidekick. I don't, you know, I'm not sure when Kobe's going to retire. I don't feel comfortable with Mike D'Antoni, so it's time for me to get out of here. And that's why I said, hey, Dwight, I get it. That's fine. Go to Houston. That's your chance. Go ahead and do it. But this
and
is
a young team, right? An up-and-coming team in Houston. The L.A. Lakers roster is aging. All around, they're starting five. Steve Nash, 39, almost 40. Kobe Bryant, 36, 37. Maybe on the downside of his career, coming off of a major surgery and injury that he suffered at the end of last season. And then Paul Gasol, he's shown some signs of wear and tear and of not being the same player, a player that was a great passer from the low post on the low block in the past, when in his prime, but no longer possessing those skills on a nightly basis. So he's going downhill too. And then you look at what they can do, they're kind of restricted what they can do. They were with Dwight. Now maybe not so much, and they can look towards the future, build for that, gain some future assets. Because honestly, I think they kind of have to tear it all apart. Because they're not going to win with their current roster. There's no young shooters, young scorers on that team that you can build around, that you can count on to be leaders and vital members of your roster going forward on that Lakers team as they're currently structured. I would just tear it apart. Right?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to tear it apart, but I'm saying, like I said, if you want it to stay there and you want it to be tear apart, then you need to voice that opinion. Just like Kobe's going to voice his opinion in Houston, he'll have a chance to voice his opinion. Just like James Harden will have a chance to voice his opinion. He needs to go, or this can't work. We got to make the necessary moves. That's the same thing I feel with the Lakers. The moves will be made. There's no doubt in my mind about that, because that's just how they are. They're, like I said, Lakers are useless. Lakers know. They went through that before when Shaq left, after the Lakers lost to the Pistons. They went through their moments where, you know, it's like Shaq's gone. They went through their moments when they were, you know, somewhat one of the laughing teams in the NBA compared to what they used to be. You know what? Kobe started really sitting down, and I'm not saying Kobe's going to be that guy this time. It may be somebody totally different, but somebody's going to sit down and say, okay, this is what we need to do. We got to get rid of him. We got to get rid of him. We got to add him. And they're going to go out there and make those moves and get back into
Kobe, right? To get into title contention for the future.
And even if it isn't Kobe.
They've done it in the past, right? They've retooled in the past. Well, they know how to do it.
Yeah, they know how to do it. And that's why I said at the end of the day, if you're a Laker fan, quit crying about Dwight. If you trust your organization, you know, and like I said, I can see if L.A. had never been through this before. But L.A. has been through it. I witnessed it, you know, because I was old enough after they lost to the Pistons to see their downfall in that finals and say, oh, dang, you know, L.A.'s not the same team that they were. But you know what? It might have took a minute. It maybe didn't come as quick as some Laker fans would have liked. But eventually, they sat down, they made those moves, and they ended up making it right back, and they were contention again, and they ended up getting 2 rings, 4, and now they're going through that. Every organization at some point goes through. Detroit went through it and came back and then lost it, and they're trying to come back again. Boston has gone through it, lost it, and then came back. At the end of the day, it's just a cycle. But I understand when Dwight's saying, hey, I want to be the top dog. I want to be the leader. I want to be on the young squad who gives me the best chance, and then we still have room to bring in other people, like we said. And I think that was very smart on Dwight Howard's part, and that's why I'm more so happy about how he went about making his decision. My whole thing with Dwight is just be prepared for things to get rough. That's my biggest thing with him. Just don't, I don't want to hear when trade deadline comes, oh, I want to be traded. I don't, you know, I want him to understand, look, man, just because you go to Houston doesn't mean it's automatically going to be a championship caliber.
It's going to be great from day one, yeah. Yeah,
you know, you're going to have to work at it. You might have to make those tough decisions as that leader. You and James and Kevin McHale sit down and say, you know what, I like this kid, but Garcia not working. Or we got to get rid of him. Or you know what, we need to clear out some cap space because I need somebody else in the post with me. Something like that. That's what it's going to be about. And that's what I'm the most interested in seeing with Dwight Howard. Like I said, I love the way he broke down things and understands how Houston gives him probably the better chance right now. But just understand, Dwight, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to necessarily be something that comes like that. Just like LeBron and Wade and those guys had to sit down and make those tough decisions and move it with the Heat, he's going to have to do that. Just like I feel Brooklyn's going to go through the same thing, I feel Clippers are going to go through the same thing. You have to sit down sometimes and make those moves and become that leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're capable of being, you just have to do it. And like I said, that's what I'm really watching with Dwight Howard. Let's see how he evolves. And hopefully he does. Because like I said, he's a great talent. He just hasn't unleashed that potential yet, and he hasn't shown that great maturity yet.
And back to the Lakers real quick and their struggles. They might amnesty Ron Artest, get rid of his contract. And rightfully so. Look at their team. They're aging. Lots of old veterans that are on the downside of their careers, as we already noted. And they barely got into the postseason last year as an eighth seed. They struggled to make it as an eighth seed and then got swept after Kobe went down with that injury. They went 28-12 down the stretch. Now with Dwight Howard and a healthy Kobe, too, before he got injured the last two, three games of the regular season. But were they ever going to improve on that? Were they going to continue to make strides with the roster that they had, along with Dwight playing center, starting at the five? I don't think they would have advanced past the first round or gone any farther and made immediate strides, strides that would have gotten them into the Western Conference Finals, into the NBA Finals, as they were structured with Dwight. So they probably made the right move, and all those crying, unsatisfied fans in L.A., move on and shut up, I guess, right? Because Dwight didn't want to play for you, so move on. Go for the future now. Get some cap room space, right? Because Dwight wasn't getting it done anyway, and he didn't want to play for you guys.
I mean, yeah, but that's just fans being fans. I mean, you still got fans who are blaming Joe Dumars for Chauncey leaving, not just understanding Chauncey didn't want to be here. Chauncey didn't want to be in Detroit anymore, and that's okay. You still got people mad in Cleveland about LeBron. That's just fans being fans, which is why I completely ignore them and don't even indulge half the time in conversation with them. No offense to fans, but sometimes fans are just unbiased. They take things personal.
And overreact,
like
right?
And they
overreact to everything.
And
get over it. Like, move on, man.
Yeah, if Houston doesn't make it to the championship this year, all of a sudden they're going to be like, see, we told you should stay with L.A. If L.A. makes a comeback, let's say 2015, all of a sudden it'll be all well again. That's just, like I said, fans have to understand you're going to go through this. If I'm a fan, I'm more, like I said, forget the Dwight situation. I'm more just so looking at, you know, Mike Kupchak. What are you going to do now? Kobe,
now,
what,
yeah, what is the next move for the Lakers?
Now, yeah,
so
like,
they kind of tank it this season and try to make a run at Andrew Wiggins in next year's draft through the lottery. Do they make a run at him maybe and try to get into that lottery by kind of tanking it this year, taking a year off and rebuilding like the Celtics have done this year through the offseason moves they've made? What's your take on that?
They may make that move, you know, and that will be interesting to see if they make that move, if they're going to tank. But like I said, I think more than anything, the moves that you want to make are always going to be questionable until really we know the status of Mike D'Antoni. And that's where I say I'm still concerned, because I wouldn't be surprised if Mike D'Antoni's gone after this upcoming season, 2013-2014 season. Because I personally just don't think if you're the Lakers, you're going to win with D'Antoni. I just don't personally believe that. So for me, it goes back to that head coach first. Mike D'Antoni may be the coach now, but I doubt he'll be the coach 2014-2015 season. So then that's when I can start feeling comfortable saying, okay, this is where they're headed. Because if you're going to have Mike D'Antoni in this system or in this situation, that system of players is totally going to change. You can go get an Andrew Wiggins, but he doesn't know what to do with Andrew Wiggins. He doesn't even know what to do with a Kobe. He's never had a Kobe. He's had a Nash, he's had an Amari, and he has a gang of shooters. So when you put him in that situation, it's like, well, you know, you can go get Andrew, but I hope D'Antoni doesn't destroy him, because, you know, Kobe's not going to be destroyed because Kobe is self-sufficient. So Kobe can, you know, he's like, look, dude, I run this squad. But for a guy like Andrew, I would be a little concerned, because I'm like, well, I don't want D'Antoni messing up Andrew and what he is or making him something that he isn't. Because Andrew is a versatile guy who's on the offensive side and the defensive side. We know D'Antoni knows nothing about defense. So it might not be a bad idea to tank this season if they want and maybe try to go make that move for Andrew Wiggins. But before anything can be done, I think anything the Lakers do this year will probably be short-term to a certain point of view. I mean, long-term goals would be going to get somebody like a Greg Monroe, going to get a DeMarcus Cousins, trading to get a Marshawn Gortat, somebody like
young
that
guys,
would be a
right?
long-term decision. Yeah, young guys. And like I said, that's why I'm saying this year I wouldn't make a big deal about it, because if you are going to get a long-term big man to go take the spot of a Dwight Howard and ultimately a Paul Gasol, who's obviously winding down too, you need to feel comfortable with the coaches you have. And right now, I don't think most big men would feel comfortable coming into the situation in a Mike D'Antoni system unless you're a guy who's similar to an Amari Stoudemire skill set where you're going to be on the perimeter. But the big men I just named, like Marshawn Gortat, Greg Monroe, DeMarcus Cousins, who you can go after this year or in 2014, those guys are not going to be guys. They're going to be in the post, and that's what you want. But D'Antoni's not that guy. So I think that's really what Laker fans really need to be honestly thinking about, you know, while they're complaining about Dwight burning his jerseys, putting up these girl photos of him on Instagram. That's really what they need to be thinking about right now is, hey, do we really want this team to be built around D'Antoni? And then if you don't want it to be built around D'Antoni, then Lakers need to make that move and start saying, okay, who can we go get? You should have went and got Phil Jackson in the first place. But if you can't get Phil Jackson, who do you go get? And then you can start facing the fact, okay, we need Greg or we need DeMarcus. Like we said, LeBron, Bosh. a lot of these other guys, Melo, they're going to be available coming up soon. Don't be surprised if they try to, yeah, don't be surprised if they go after a LeBron or a Melo. They're already blowing that up out of proportion right now. Oh, season hasn't even started yet. They're already talking about Lakers are going to pursue LeBron James, as they should. And they should pursue a Carmelo Anthony, because those guys are going to be hungry for championships. They have already shown me, especially LeBron, that, hey, I understand what it takes to win. I know what people put around me, whether that includes a Kobe or not. Like I said, a Melo, he hasn't necessarily shown me that, but with the right type of organization, he won't have to show you that. They'll show you for him. So that's what's going to be interesting with the Lakers. But it all, once again, goes back to D'Antoni. You got to get D'Antoni out of there. Because I think it's
get him out of there.
As long as D'Antoni
they can't succeed under that system. The
you
current
can.
Lakers personnel can't get it done, can't execute with D'Antoni's system. So you have to move on sooner than later from D'Antoni. Hire a new head coach and get a new system implemented that your guys can succeed under. Because D'Antoni is not the guy for that. Move on, fire him, and they probably will eventually. Maybe not for this season because they're going to tank it and downplay what they do this year and probably be a middling ball club that barely gets into the postseason or misses out by 5 to 10 games. They're just not going to be a great title contender this year out of the West. So it's about gaining future assets, looking towards the future. Kobe sitting down, like you said, with Mitch Kupchak and looking to see what he can acquire to better his team going into the future. Because if Kobe wants to win another title and play another 3 to 4 years, then you got to get that talent that can play long-term in a system that Kobe's used to. Maybe the triangle, the implemented system by Phil Jackson, maybe get him back, or somebody else that can run it, such as Brian Shaw. Get back to that and get back to what you're used to, what you succeeded with in the past, and get other players that can do that, shooters like you said, and another big man that can kind of sit underneath the basket, camp under there, and be your prototypical big man that you can throw the ball down low to and that stays down there, can finish around the rim. A big, imposing force down low, like a DeMarcus Cousins. I say he's the definition of that. And Shaq's training with him, working with him now. Maybe he can become an all-star center one day. Maybe that's the guy you go after. And also getting a point guard, too, for the future to build around. Because Nash is not the answer long-term wise. So lots of decisions that have to be made in Lakerland.
Yeah, a lot of things have to be done. There's no question. But the thing is, it is possible if you put yourself in the right position. And that's what Laker fans, Lakers organization, and I'm pretty sure Kobe is thinking about. Yeah, he might post a picture talking about it's just me and Paul right now. But in his mindset, if he's thinking I'm going to come here for 3 or 4 years, he's thinking back in my mind, I'm going to be here for 3 or 4 years. I want my 6th ring. And it's time for you, whoever you consider to be, a great sports mind, to sit down with you, and I'm pretty sure there's nobody on that team that he does consider that to be right now, so it's probably going to be him.
You mean that Meta World Peace? Come on. How about some love for Meta? He's a great sports mind, right? Terrific.
He's playing, right?
He's psychotic. Yeah, I wouldn't trust that guy by any stretch. Not with anything, trust me. Yeah, move on from him, please.
Yeah, but he's going to sit down with Mitch and whoever else. And obviously, he's another guy. He'll bring in a bus. He'll bring in a Phil Jackson. Hey, you just go sit down on his meeting and just give us your expertise. Kobe's a guy. He's going to go sit down with Phil and say, Phil, what do we need to do? Even if we couldn't get you back because the problem they should have hired you in the first place, even if we can't get you back, what moves do we need to make? Go look at that free agent list if you're Kobe and start seeing who's restricted, who's unrestricted, who can we make the moves for? Because Kobe has always made it a point, especially when it came down to defense, to say, you know what, I don't like Matt Barnes. You get on my nerves. I don't like you, Metal World Peace. You get on my nerves when you defend me because you make me work hard. You get on my nerves, but I can respect the fact that you're a heck of a defender. It's time for him to do those same things now with superstars. You and LeBron, you guys have a battle going on every year. That's great. I love it. It makes me get intense every year, but maybe it's time to start saying, I need a LeBron. I need a Carmelo to play maybe that 3 and that 4 spot.
Well, they get it done in 2014 with their current cap space. Do you see King James being lured to L.A. to play for the Lakers alongside Kobe Bryant? What's your take on that?
You could, but you got to start making the moves now to get rid of that space. Like, getting rid of Meta. And they're not going to amnesty Paul Gasol, but, making that move with Paul Gasol. If I'm Kobe, it's time for you guys to sit down and look at contracts. What can we do? We don't care about this year. We're not doing anything this year. What can we get rid of and who can we start adding for the future? There are going to be point guards available next year, small forwards, shooting guards, power forwards, centers. What can we do and what do we need to keep an eye on? And that's what we're going to do. Kobe, I want you to focus on getting healthy. You focus on not this season getting back into Kobe prime form, if that's something Kobe can do. You focus this year, just make sure you stay healthy and just get in the field, because come 2014-2015 season, oh, we running, man. We running. I just need you to be ready. I don't know, 2013, don't go crazy, Kobe. Just
don't worry about it, right? Take it easy, relax. Go hang out at the pool, on the beaches in L.A. Have a good time.
Yeah. Don't worry about the fans. Oh, he's not scoring 30. He's not scoring 40. I don't care if Kobe's scoring 12. Relax, Kobe. You know what? Don't even rush yourself, Kobe. Relax. If you feel comfortable with Mitch and whoever else is in that organization that you're in a meeting with, and you say, you know what? I know what we need to do. I'm a coach this year. I'm going to do what I need to do to stay healthy. You just make sure you make the necessary moves to get the right guys in your clear cap space, and I'll sign off on it as long as, you know, we feel as a whole and I feel as a whole, hey, you know what? We can make this move. So that's, if I'm the Lakers, that's what I'm thinking of, especially if I'm Kobe and Mitch Kupchak right now.
How about a short-term fix, though, to replace Dwight Howard down low at that five position, playing center for the Lakers next season? Could it be Andrew Bynum bringing him back to L.A.? What's your take on
that? Andrew Bynum's been talked about. My thing with Andrew Bynum, though, is I think he's
I heard
gonna,
about Dallas, too, and the Mavs rumor to be interested in him. How about them as a suitor as well for Bynum's services?
Well, with Bynum in L.A., I think he's going to have the same problems Dwight had as far as, I don't want to play with D'Antoni. I don't think it's a matter of Kobe. It's just, you know, that's not going to work. I don't think he'll want to play with D'Antoni. I think he's going to want the ball in his hands. He's going to go to do things like he was when he was with the Lakers before. He's not going to get that. Him in Dallas, I think, will be fine. Rick Carlisle's going to use him. He's going to use him well. Obviously, they need some type of defensive push in that post. The biggest thing with Dallas, we're going to get Andrew Bynum, is just feeling comfortable that he's going to stay healthy and that he'll be ready to go, and hopefully he'll get a haircut, and after that, they'll be fine. Greg Oden has come up a couple times before with the Lakers. Do you go get Greg and maybe go let him be a short-term thing? Because it's not, people say Greg probably won't be signed for a long-term deal, or probably be something short just in case he doesn't pan out the way you want, or if he turns up injured again. So that's something else the Lakers need to consider. If you're talking about a center or somebody to be next to Paul Gasol, you know, Andrew Bynum comes to mind, even though I still don't think he'll want to be in D'Antoni's system. Greg Monroe, I don't know what his mindset is when it comes to coming back to the NBA, if he's thinking, how do I make myself the most successful, or if he just wants to be on a team.
You're talking about Greg Oden, correct?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Greg Oden. That's the whole thing with Greg Oden. Just do you want to, what kind of system do you want to be in? Because it's going to be hard for a lot of these big men to really be happy about coming to a D'Antoni system, seeing how it really didn't work for Dwight, if they're smart. And I'm thinking Greg Oden and Andrew are probably like, dude, Dwight hated that system because big men don't get a chance to do what they do well in the post.
Yep.
He doesn't use them well. But D'Antoni's never had a big man, not like that. So in short term, if you're just trying to have any success short term, even just, you know, get a couple wins in, I wouldn't even necessarily go attack that center position unless you felt comfortable in knowing that Andrew Bynum or one of those guys could be a guy you can build around. You might as well just go get a power forward and unfortunately move Paul back to that center spot. Like, go either make sure Jordan Hill gets healthy. Go get a Kenyon Martin. Go get somebody who's going to actually fit that four spot that Mike D'Antoni can use, if anything. If somebody cheap who you can get, like I said, like a Kenyon Martin or something like that, who's going to fit what you want in that way. Because, like I said, I would be shocked if Greg Oden and Andrew Bynum came, because I'd be like, well, did you not pay attention to what D'Antoni did? Unless you felt comfortable coming into the situation that Mike D'Antoni's going to be fired, I would be shocked if Andrew Bynum or Oden came back saying, oh, yeah, we want to play with the Lakers. Why? Did you see what Dwight went through? You actually think it's going to be different with you guys? You guys don't have jump shots. You guys are post players just like Dwight is. I don't think that's going to work out for you as well as you thought you think it is, unless they're just thinking that Tony's going to be fired after this season or by this season. So we don't care. We'll be around when they start rebuilding. So, you know, it'll be interesting, no doubt. But short-term deals, like I said, Andrew Bynum and Greg Oden come to mind. But if you're looking to move Paul Gasol maybe back to that center spot and get a four that D'Antoni can actually use somewhat, then guys like King and Martin and Jordan Hill come to mind automatically for guys you can put in at that four spot.
Now let's talk about one of the free agents, Lauren, already off the market, Andre Iguodala, the former Nugget, former Philadelphia 76er, going to the Warriors, signing a four-year deal to play alongside Steph Curry, Harrison Barnes, Klay Thompson, all those guys in Golden State under head coach Mark Jackson. Do you think that was a wise decision made by Iguodala and the Warriors as well, bringing him to play the three position? And how much better of a team, how much improved are they now going into next season? Are they a team that could contend for a title out of the West and beat the Spurs this time around if they rematch them in the Western Conference semis. What's your take on that?
I think it was a good move. I like the move because really Andre Iguodala's main flaw is the fact that he's not a lethal shooter. When you're surrounded by shooters, that becomes a flaw that quite frankly doesn't matter. Defensively, he's a guy who can guard the 1 through 4. He's going to bring you another version of athleticism. He's a guy who already moves well without the ball, unlike a Klay Thompson who comes off screens and shoots threes. He's going to be a guy that's going to be doing a lot of things, you know, maybe off a pick and roll that you can do with Steph Curry, a guy in transition you can also appreciate who's going to finish strong at the rim. Like I said, defensively, he's a talent. He's a guy who's hungry to succeed. He's been on some teams where he hasn't been able to get what he wanted. You know, he's on Philly, never went anywhere. Went to Denver, didn't work out the way he planned, but there were no shooters to, you know, mask his flaws. So now he's going here, and I think it's going to be a good move. The most tricky thing about this would just be the deep rotation of wing players. You have a Klay Thompson, you have a Harrison Barnes, and you have an Andre Iguodala. The whole thing with that is just seeing how they're going to match that. Then you got six men like Adeli and Draymond Green. So it's going to be really interesting just to see how they go about that, as far especially with Harrison Barnes and Andre Iguodala at that three spot, Harrison Barnes being maybe a sixth man, because I don't necessarily see them putting Andre Iguodala on the bench as a sixth man, especially with the money they paid him. But this is, I think, like I said, this is going to be an overflowing unit of offensive firepower. Now you have two standout defenders who can help negate the flaws of others. So I like the move. I felt it was a good move for the Golden State Warriors, who understand, hey, we have an opportunity. Let's take advantage of it. Like I said, Andre is very different, but you can feel comfortable in bringing Harrison Barnes off that bench with that second unit who you have to continue to make sure you get back in the form. And Golden State can be a team ready to watch. The other big thing with Golden State, besides Stephen Curry staying healthy, will be Andrew Bogut staying healthy. That's the other thing, because he's a key component. You have a good piece in Curry, Thompson, Iguodala, Lee. You need Bogut to stay healthy in that starting five, and then you can feel comfortable with a guy like Harrison Barnes coming off the bench with Festus Ezeli, Draymond Green, and bringing those guys off the bench. You just have to continue to build up that second unit, and Golden State will be a team to watch. I felt they were going to be a team to watch for a while now. They were a team to watch when Don Nelson was the coach. They just never made it to the playoffs. But now, once again,
and they were
a team
older, too. They were a veteran squad. They're young, up-and-coming now. They're a budding team with some budding superstars, or definitely budding all-stars, and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And Iguodala is a borderline all-star as well, playing that three position. And a great defender, bringing defense on the perimeter now. And they really didn't possess that with Steph Curry and Thompson as much as they do now with Iguodala.
Yes, I agree. It's a good move. And quite frankly, what you saw was a pretty good move for them, too. You know, going out here and getting some small pieces with their young squad that they're pretty much building up with Trey Burke. I felt like Utah also, you know, it may not be looked at as right now as good, but, you know, they got 2014 to 2017 first-round picks out of it. They went and got Beadrins, who's a nice role player. You got Brandon Rush, who I feel is a quiet young guy just waiting for the right opportunity, a sneaky, valuable player that I think if he can stay healthy, Trey Burke would probably like playing with. So, actually, I think Utah also, you know, got a pretty decent deal in this as well, as far as just, you know, what they're trying to build right now in Utah, which is a comeback squad. But Golden State overall, this is a great deal. I like it. It's just a matter of just seeing how they're going to work things with the lineup as far as Harrison Barnes. Like I said, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, guys like that, because you do have a nice wing, some nice wing depth now. So it's just about watching that. But it's a great move. I like it by Golden State. It's going to be very interesting to see how they play this season.
Who's a better team in the West, though, Lauren? The Rockets with Dwight Howard at the center position, or the Warriors with all that perimeter play in the backcourt and now on the wing with Iguodala?
Personally, I still think Warriors are the better team right now. With Houston, I like what they're doing, but to me, they still have moves that need to be made. They're still bringing in some other nice pieces now that I have concerns about. James Harden is a guy who creates for you, but you still have the up-and-down issue of Jeremy Lin. What is he going to be? Can he stay healthy? Is he going to be your guy that creates the opportunities?
He's really the starting point guard, right? I don't think he's worthy of that now. He's not good enough to get it done on a consistent basis.
But then you need to make that move, because technically you'll be giving James that power. So that's why I'm saying Houston, as good as this move was for them, they still have work to do. And like I said, I don't get excited on what you look like on paper or what pieces you have on paper. I go by what you do on the court consistently. Golden State has shown me what they can do consistently. They did it this last past season with Mark Jackson. They showed me even years ago when that Don Nelson was their head coach. I know what they can do. Now I just need to see how they're going to work it with Andre Iguodala. But still, I feel Golden State Warriors right now are still the better team than Houston. Not that Houston won't outshine them or outmatch them at some point, but as of right now, Golden State is still that team in the West right now that's, in my personal opinion, that is better than
Houston. So what does Houston still have to add, Lauren, in terms of pieces to make that roster better, to make it more of a title contender, and to make them better than the likes of the Warriors and the Spurs out West, and maybe even the OKC Thunder? Because I think we both agree they need to address the point guard situation, get a few more shooters. But also, how about that four position? Ashiq doesn't really like Dwight Howard. They might trade him. And then Josh Smith isn't going to Houston now. Jace Move is not going to play the four. How big of a loss is that, and do they have to upgrade in that position as well to make themselves a legitimate title contender out West?
Yeah, point guard is definitely something they need to upgrade on. Four spot, as I said before, is definitely going to be something they need to upgrade at, just because, as you just said, Amir Zeke is not supposedly a fan of Dwight, doesn't want to play there anymore. I don't blame him for that. So that four spot is definitely still something that they need to be concerned about. And they also still need to be worried about as well, most importantly, about that bench. As I've said so many times before, you're nothing. You can have the most amazing starting five in the game, but at some point you're going to need those key guys to come off the bench and play. I do like the draft pick they went and got in Isaiah Cannon out of Murray State. I feel like that was a great underrated pick. He's, you know, the 6'1 guard. He's a point guard, but he's able to facilitate and help you out in that way. But he also can score for you as well. So I think they made a good move there. You still have Terrence Jones as well on the roster. So it's going to be a lot more so what pieces you do use correctly, like I feel like an Isaiah Cannon, Terrence Jones, who could be those nice guys off the bench for you, or possibly even maybe start if you don't want to maybe put Lynn, or if you want to put somebody at that small forward spot. But they have to find somebody, once again, to be that point guard in that forward spot, I think, in that starting lineup. And more importantly, they just have to make sure they have the right pieces off the bench who can come in and still keep things going. Patrick Beverley showed us what he was capable of. I like Isaiah Cannon out of the Murray State, who they drafted. I like Terrence Jones, who they have on their roster. I think those are nice beginning pieces right now for the bench. You just got to make sure that they're going to develop and maybe get one more post piece in there that you can count on off the bench to maybe just offer some rebounding. But it's more so about that bench and that fourth spot and that point guard, because Jeremy Lin is not your point guard, I think, at this point. You need to find somebody who can help you do some pick and roll with Dwight. James, we know we can do it, but James, as well as he plays with the ball in his hands, he also plays well specifically at that two position as well. Let him stay there. Let him be at times a creator. But go get yourself a point guard. That's what you need to do. And then you got to go fill that fourth spot. Chandler Parsons is more of a, you know, a three. He's going to stretch the ball.
A three that can stretch,
that
yeah. He's
so
a nice three-point shooter to have.
Yeah, he's a nice three-point shooter. So like I said, and the four does not have to be, obviously, it does not have to be a Josh Smith. It just needs to be a four that you can count on in some way to keep this team going. Personally, I still would like for that four to be able to do things defensively, because the four spot is becoming more and more versatile in the NBA. So I need to feel comfortable with my four that I can put him out on the perimeter at times to guard those quicker fours, that he should be able to shoot, maybe, you know, not necessarily a three-point shooter, just be able to maybe have a nice mid-range game. That way he's not clogging up the paint, maybe with Dwight Howard. So it doesn't, that four that they go after doesn't have to be, obviously, like I said, a big-time four. It doesn't have to be a Josh Smith, but maybe you want some of those similar characteristics of a Josh Smith. Hey, you can be on the perimeter at the mid-range, shoot some jump shots for it. That's what we need you to come in and do. I need to feel comfortable that I can put you on a four, and if some of you want to play some small ball, I want to feel comfortable that I can put you at the four spot and know that you can handle it and not get beat because you're too big or you're too slow and things of that nature. So that fourth spot and point guard are for sure the main thing I'm thinking about, because I feel like that bench is okay.
As the Rockets lost out on him, the Pistons gained him in terms of Josh Smith to play the four position. Greg Monroe's still on the roster. They might deal him, though, for a point guard. Now, with their current roster, though, intact, if they continue with the same team going into the upcoming season, how good are the Pistons, and where do they rank in the East? Are they good enough to be the eighth seed out of the East? What's your take on that?
With the Pistons, I personally feel they are to a point where they should be able to make the playoffs, as I said before, with the Pistons, not even with the Pistons, but with the East period. Those normally first four, maybe five spots, but generally we already know we're going to get those spots in the East as far as playoffs. Normally, if not five through eight is normally available for those who are just playing hard and going. I mean, we've seen the Bucks do it, and the Bucks are nowhere near a real, you know, playoff team, but they work hard, they do what they're supposed to do in the, you know, during the regular season, they're able to make it. There's no reason why the Pistons cannot be that number 18, that number 17, no reason at all. with Josh Smith there, assuming you keep Greg Monroe for the time being, I'm assuming you're going to have to make a decision on who you want to start at the five. Will you let Greg Monroe be that five or that four, or I'm guessing a five, or will you let Andre Drummond be that five? And that's going to be the interesting thing. But regardless of that, the good thing is you are going to have a nice post player coming off the bench, whether it's Andre Drummond or Greg Monroe.
But couldn't they go really big with their starting lineup too? Start Smith at the three, Monroe at the four, and then Drummond at the five, though?
They could. I just don't personally feel comfortable with Josh Smith at the three. I've never felt comfortable. Uh-huh. I feel like Josh has always done his best work at the four because it allows him to spread. I don't necessarily know if I trust him to check those quicker threes and those more versatile threes. I always felt comfortable with him checking more so fours than I did threes. So I think it's a little bit of a defensive liability depending on the matchup. But, yeah, they could go big and, you know, say, you know what, we're going to start too big and we're going to put Josh Smith at the three. I just feel similar to what I said about Carmelo. He does his best work at the four. I feel Josh does his best work at the four. You can put him at small forward, but I feel he does his best work at that four spot, at that power mm-hmm. forward. But if they want to do it, it still probably will work, but that's still something to look out for. And then the other thing, too, is just the point guard spot. Mo Cheeks, a lot of people were upset they didn't go get Trey Burke, and basically that showed me that Mo Cheeks is trusting in Brandon Knight, at least for the time being, and being his point guard. You went and got Peyton Steve in the draft as a backup. You know, you already lost Calderon. You lost him to the Mavericks. They signed him. So that's basically another thing I'm watching, too. A lot of this also will have to do with the point guard play or the consistent point guard play of a Brandon Knight, because that's who Mo Cheeks, like I said, at least for the time being, is trusting and saying, you know what, he's going to be my point guard, or else they would have went and got a Trey Burke in the draft this year. So that's the other key piece is Brandon Knight. How is Brandon Knight going to play this year? Is he going to be able to facilitate and get those players involved? Because now you are dealing with some guys who can really score the ball. And then, Mo Cheeks, what kind of offense are you going to set up where you can be successful? I originally said if you went and got Trey Burke, pick and roll would have been great. The great thing about Josh Smith is even at that three, you can still do some pick and pop or some pick and roll things with him. So it's also going to be a lot about Mo Cheeks' offense and the way he designs it. Even if you go big or you go small, regardless, it's going to be about Mo Cheeks and Brandon Knight for sure, because those are the two guys who ultimately are going to run that offense and come up with the offensive design no matter who you start. Because regardless of who you start, it will work.
Sorry to cut you off, but we'll end the NBA offseason discussion with that. Thank you very much for all your insight today on 5 Wide Sports Live. Let's do it again in the near future.
Have a good one. You too.
And let's now bring into the frame Mr. C.J. Nikowski, former Major League Baseball pitcher. C.J. Nikowski. C.J., welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vito. How are you?
I'm very good. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well, man.
So, what are your thoughts on the first half of baseball in general? How would you say that teams have performed, teams surprising, maybe teams underachieving too? How have they been in terms of expectations that you had going into the season?
I'd say probably one of the biggest surprises has been the Boston Red Sox. I think a lot of people, myself included, had kind of anticipated them having another rough season, especially after what happened last year and everything with the Bobby Valentine mess and how the team performed. But I think John Farrell has come in, has done a good job. They got off to a great start. They've been able to maintain it, and they've been a really nice surprise in the AL East. I think the Pittsburgh Pirates are probably the story of the season right now. Certainly going to be over 500 after not being able to do it for almost 20 years now. A nice year in Pittsburgh. Things going very well for them. We're, over 20 games, over 500 at this point in the season. They're likely headed for the playoffs, so it won't be easy, but they certainly have shown that the organization has turned around. I think we knew what was going to happen in Miami. I think we knew what was going to happen in Houston, both of those teams struggling mightily. But I'd say overall, probably the biggest disappointment has been the Anaheim Angels and the struggles mm-hmm. of Josh Hamilton and Albert Pujols. It's been a pretty rough year out in the West Coast for them and for the Dodgers as well, though they start to come back a little bit. So it's been an interesting season. It always is.
All-around struggles in L.A. for both clubs, the NL club and the Dodgers, also the American League ball club, and the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Now, they swept and took care of business against the Tigers, and as they came back, they caused the Cardinals closer the other night to blow a save, Edward Mojica. I believe that's how you say his last name. Now, they caused him to blow a save, and that doesn't happen very often against the Cards in their bullpen. They came back, and Albert Pujols started it off for the Halos, too, in that ninth inning. So, some recent success, but not great thus far in the first half. The Blue Jays had an 11-game winning streak. Now, they've kind of tailed off. They've struggled, and actually just lost 3 out of 4 against the Tigers. And the Tigers could be a little bit better. But now they've won four straight. They're 2.5 up on the Indians. Do you believe, CJ, that they'll keep that lead and expand it going forward into the second half of the season?
You mean the Tigers? I do. I think so. They, they got off to a rough start, and Justin Verlander has been good but not great. Rick Porcello has been really inconsistent. He was really good last night, but he hasn't quite been what they expected after, you know, some adjustments that had been made in a tremendous spring training that he had. So, but I do. They're the better team. They're certainly the best team in the American League Central. They're built to win, you know, a very weak division, and I think eventually what they'll do is they'll run away with it. The Indians have been somewhat of a surprise. They made some changes in the offseason, brought in Nick Swisher and Terry Francona, and it's been a better year in Cleveland. Jason Kipnis is hitting the ball as well as anybody right now. Hail Player of the Month last month after hitting over nearly 420. But the Tigers are the better team. They have some issues. They have some bullpen issues that need to get solved, and knowing Dave Dombrowski and how good he's been, those issues will probably get solved before the trade deadline.
And you mentioned the Pirates, too, and their success in the first half of the season thus far. 21 games up, above 500 at one point, 51-30 at one point, in first place in the NL Central. The extra competitive, very balanced and top-heavy NL Central, with the Reds also in that division. Also the Cards. It could be three teams from that division this season. But how do you see the division faring and matching up going forward this season? Who makes it from the Central?
The Cardinals are the best team for sure in that division. I think that they will hold on. They seem to be the deepest. They probably have the best pitching. I can't imagine it doesn't end close to how it is right now. I think the Pirates will win the second wild card. The first wild card. I think the Reds will win the second. I think we'll just see division winners come out of the NL East and the NL West. The NL West is just not very strong. There's no wild card team that's coming out of the West. The only thing that could mess things up a little bit for the Pirates is if the Washington Nationals continue to get a little bit better. They haven't quite been what we thought they were going to be prior to the season starting. So if they get their act together and make a strong run, we could be seeing, you know, potentially a fight for that last playoff spot between what could be the Washington Nationals and either the Cincinnati Reds or the Pittsburgh Pirates.
And how about that weak NL West, like you said? All these teams under 500, besides for the D-backs. The Dodgers have been better of late, have been kind of hot and streaky, and look like maybe they're coming into form. And Puig has been great in his first month, Rookie of the Month, and looks like a great 5-2 ball player for that Dodgers team to build around for the future. Now, what do you think he's been for that team, and what can he be going forward in the second half for the Dodgers? And can they maybe make a run and catapult some teams in that NL West going forward as well?
Well, to their advantage is the fact that the division is weak, and so certainly that helps. I mean, if you look at the records, they're not much better than the Toronto Blue Jays, but the Toronto Blue Jays have no chance because they're in a much stronger division.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's how I see it. So when you go back and you look at Puig, they have a good roster there. They have a bunch of good players, but just something wasn't clicking. You put a bunch of high-priced players together like they did this offseason, it wasn't an automatic recipe for success. And I think what we saw was potentially some complacency. There was a comfort level there. It just kind of came across on that roster, and they just really lacked kind of a passion and a fire. And a guy like Puig comes up and just kind of plays with an unbelievable level of intensity. His first time in the big leagues, and you look at his background and where he came from and defecting from Cuba and his history, I think there's no doubt that he injected some energy into that ball club, some very much needed energy into that ball club. And so, he's obviously a very good player. He's sometimes can be a little bit over aggressive with the base running.
Yes, we've seen that happen. Yep.
And everything else, but he is, he's obviously a very good player. He's very talented. He's going to be there. He's made the outfield situation a little sticky, but now Matt Kemp gets hurt last night. And so, that kind of clears things up a little bit as far as playing time goes, because Carl Crawford is back and you have Andre Ethier, and trying to find playing time for all four of those guys would have been a little tricky, but it seems like they just keep having a couple of injuries that change things a little bit. But, he's an excellent ball player. He should be on the All-Star team, and the Dodgers are lucky to have him. Made a smart move by the money they spent on him.
And it has been tough playing all those four guys in the outfield, giving them all equal playing time with all their big contracts and superb ability and talent levels. Now, really haven't reached those talent levels this season, but have the past track records of Crawford, who's hitting better now, has had a pretty good first half when healthy. Kemp not so much, and Andre Ethier the same thing. So how do they fit all those guys into the lineup going forward?
Well, they really,
do you think they'll be able to give all those guys enough playing time to make it worth it for all those guys to be in the lineup on a consistent regular basis, CJ?
Yeah, it really hasn't been an issue for them because guys have been hurt. Carl Crawford just got activated last night at the same time that Matt Kemp has gotten hurt last night. And so they haven't had all four guys on all cylinders. And so that hasn't been an issue yet. It could be eventually. When you get to that point when you're Don Mattingly, then it just goes, strictly on performance. I mean, he's battling for his job as much as he is battling to get his team in the postseason. And so for him, it comes down to putting the best players out there. It's going to be that simple, regardless of how much money you make. He cannot afford to not put the best players on the field. So if they get to the point where all four of those guys are healthy, they'll figure it out.
Do they have enough to make a second-half turnaround, though? It looks like they do because of their division, the weakness in that division, as a collective whole.
Yes, I agree with that. I mean, that's part of it. That helps a ton, is that their division is not doing very well. Every team in that division has their question marks. Certainly the San Francisco Giants, the Colorado Rockies have not been very good, especially as of late. So for me, I think they do have the team for it. They have the players in place. They have guys with histories, with track records that have been very good. It's just a matter of whatever their issues have been early on, can they cure them? I think a big part of that, too, is that Hanley Ramirez was not available, and he was hurt. And now, he's as hot as anybody. You don't hear about him as much because of what Puig has done. But if you go back and look and see what Hanley Ramirez has done since he's gotten off the disabled list, it's been nothing short of remarkable himself.
Now, how about the Pirates in the NL Central? A great ball club, great story in the first half, in the top of their division all year long so far, 20 games above 500. Do they keep it up in the second half, though? I believe they can because of their strength in starting rotation from 1 through 5.
Yeah, I absolutely can. I do. I mean, they don't have a particularly strong offense, but what they do well is they pitch and they play defense. And we talked about the rotation, very consistent 1 through 5. Francisco Liriano has been as good as anybody and been, really an unbelievable comeback story based on, you look at his last two seasons, have not been very good. He's been outstanding since he's been there. He threw excellent last night, second complete game of his career. The pitching staff is in good shape. Their bullpen is what is the difference maker for me. I mean, yes, they're deep in their rotation.
How about Grilly, too, with that improved velocity out of nowhere?
Yeah, they have a lot. They have a lockdown closer. They have a lockdown bullpen. Mark Melanson has been excellent. The lefty Wilson has been very good. And so, they have all the parts in place. It's a matter of, what or who they add possibly to maybe put them over the top. You certainly could see them trying to make a move, depending on where they're at financially. But they have to go for it. They're in a situation where they absolutely have to go for it. And so I would expect them to probably try to bolster their lineup a little bit. But they're certainly in good shape for the second half.
So from one great first half story to a disappointing one in L.A., switching our attention from the NL ball club, the Dodgers, to the Halos now. Disappointing hitters in the middle of that lineup with Pujols struggling. Hamilton all year long struggling. Oh, 11 bombs, I believe. Not consistent production out of him. And big money being spent on both those guys. Trout has kept it up, but their rotation is not helping out or supporting that offense at all. So on top of not the best lineup this year, a dismal rotation 1 through 5. Besides for Jared Weaver for the most part, and C.J. Wilson here and there. He's been solid, I guess, but not a great number two. Can they get their act together going into the second half, though? Do they have enough with that pitching staff in that starting rotation to turn it around? Or do they have to make another move or two to have at least a chance to turn it around in the second half?
No, they don't. For me, they don't have a chance, and that's because the division is too strong. They're not going to leave Prague, I don't see, unless there's some major injuries. I don't see how they get past the Texas Rangers and the Oakland Athletics. Their pitching staff, their starting rotation has been better as of late, but not enough. Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton have been better, but not better enough. And so they're just dug themselves too deep of a hole to start the season. Their division is too strong. I just don't see how it could happen. Just not enough time for the run that they would have to go on. They would have to play just a ridiculously winning percentage of baseball to get there. And it's almost impossible. They're just not built for it, and I just don't think they have the parts in place.
And how big of a bust has Hamilton been for the Halos, too, this year? That big, massive, multi-year deal, failing to live up to expectations in the bright lights of Anaheim. But will he be worth it in the long haul, maybe, in a year or two? Or is the story in L.A. for him over with already, before it really even got started for Hamilton?
No, I don't think you look at him as a bust just yet. It's been a terrible first half of the season, and so that's part of the problem. But I believe it was a 5-year contract that he had. He's got 4.5 years to go on that contract still. And so I don't say it's a bust. I don't say you wait. You can't wait. You don't sign a guy like that and say, let's see, what happens in a year or two. I mean, he needs to turn it around quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's just been struggling. Like I said, it's been a little better, but still not great. But, you know, it's for Artie Moreno, for the Angels, they're not saying, hey, let's hope that he gets it going pretty soon, or, you know, that he can be good the last couple of years or his contract. No, they need production immediately, and they need it to, you know, to stay through the entire contract.
Yeah, he has to really turn it around quickly to be worth that contract over the 5 years of it in L.A. Pujols signed to 10 years in L.A. to play for the Halos. How about that, and how big of a disappointment he's been for the L.A. Angels thus far? And can he turn it around, you think, or is he past his prime?
Well, I don't think anybody's doubting that he's past his prime. I mean, he can still hit, but he's not mobile. And so there's obviously some injury issues there. He's been trying to fight through them. Listen, 10-year contracts are, you know, hugely risky, and they took that chance, and now they're seeing the downside of it. There's a lot of time left on that contract. I believe it's 8.5 years left, so that's a lot of money, too, that they bid off with him, and so they need to get him healthy. They're going to get to a point this year, I think, at some point soon, and realize that they don't have a chance, and whatever health issues are going on with Albert Pujols, they need to address them immediately and not let them linger, not let him try to play through it. If it's something that requires surgery, that's going on with his legs, and he needs to get it taken care of, because they cannot afford to have him just kind of going through and limping through the season. He needs to be healthy. He needs to be productive. It hasn't been pretty so far.
And especially, CJ, if they continue to be out of the race in the AL West, too. It's not worth him playing then, if it comes to that.
That's exactly right. If they get to the point, they have to be honest with themselves, not when they're mathematically eliminated, but when they're realistically eliminated, they need to address his health issues.
Now, CJ, how about the story of Chris Davis in Baltimore? He's had a coming-out party this season with now a major league leading 33 home runs after already going yard today once, plus 85 ribbies, which is good for second best in the majors behind only Miguel Cabrera's total of 86. In addition, 33 bombs is a career high for Davis, and it's not even the All-Star break yet. There's still 75 games to play for Davis and the O's. So real quick for me, CJ, talk about the progression of Davis this season and the reason why you believe he's developed into one of the best all-around sluggers in the game.
Well, I think what you're seeing is a guy who's made adjustments. He's always had power, but he's lacked consistency. And what you're seeing now from him is a guy who is trusting himself a little bit more, and that started after last season, stepping in the box with a lot more confidence. And I think for a hitter, when you have skills, just like any baseball player, regardless of what position you play, there's a mental component to playing this game that, you know, it's a hurdle that a lot of guys have to get over, and he's been able to do that. What you're seeing from him now is that not only is he hitting for power, but he's hitting for power to all fields, and you'll see a lot of home runs now going to left field, which means it's a hitter who's going to let the ball travel deep over the plate away. He can take that ball away now and drive it to left field, whether for a home run or a double in the opposite field gap, and so that all of a sudden now has made him a complete hitter. When you can cover all sides of the plate, and you can drive balls that are both away and inside, you know that you're dealing with a complete hitter, and it becomes very difficult to strategize against a hitter like that when you're a pitcher, knowing that he can go to all fields. And so that's what you're seeing from him. That's why you're seeing the high average. That's why the power has gone up. He's become very difficult to pitch to. He's done a really nice job, and is really starting to set himself apart. If it wasn't for Miguel Cabrera, I think we'd be talking about Chris Davis for MVP this year.
And do you think he's hitting 60 bombs this year for the O's in the middle of that order?
It'll be close. I mean, it depends. Assuming he stays healthy, I think the track that he's on, the way that he's doing it, he's certainly going to give himself a chance to make a run at that.
And you brought up how Miguel Cabrera for the Tigers right now, playing third base, hitting third in that order, ahead of Prince Fielder, has had an epically good season, a historic season, realistically for the Tigers and for himself. And will be the all-star starter at third base for the American League in this year's all-star game. But there's another guy out there in Dustin Pedroia, who John Paul Morosi of FoxSports.com said is worthy and more worthy of both Cabrera and Davis right now of being the American League MVP at this point in the season. What's your take on that? Has Pedroia been more valuable to the Bo Sox ball club than Cabrera has been for the Tigers and then Davis has been for the O's as well?
Well, I think you can make a case for it, certainly. I think it comes down to when you're talking about MVP, are we talking about the best player in the league, or are you going to get semantical and say we're looking for the most valuable player to his team? You know, and so that's where the discussion gets kind of kind of wacky for me. But, you know, the way I look at it, we're always talking about the best player in the league. Dustin Pedroia is an excellent player. He's having another excellent season. He means a ton to the Boston Red Sox. He leads that team both on and off the field. Excuse me, certainly you can make a case for him, but I just think Chris Davis has been the better player.
And how about that All-Star game this year being played at the New York Mets home ballpark of Citi Field? And with that being said, CJ, Matt Harvey, their young phenom, has been terrific this year in his rookie campaign, in his role as the Dark Knight, as they call him now, for a nickname. And thus far, he possesses, CJ, an NL-leading 141 Ks, plus a league-leading whip of 0.91, to go along with a record, a win-loss record of 7-2 in 18 games started. So saying all of that, do you think the numbers make him worthy, CJ, of being the starting pitcher for the National League in the 2013 All-Star game?
I do. I mean, I think he absolutely deserves it. I think that there's something to be said for, you know, letting especially a young guy like him do it in his home ballpark. You know, that's it's an easy case to make. I know he didn't have his best game last time out, but, you know, he's been phenomenal. He's been fun to watch. He's a true ace. He's been a bright spot for the New York Mets, who don't have a lot of bright spots this year. The numbers are there to support it. Could you argue Wainwright? Sure. Could you argue other guys? You know, you could probably. Kershaw is certainly an argument that you could make when you start to look a little bit deeper into the numbers. But for me, it's the All-Star game. They're all going to pitch. Why not let Matt Harvey start it, you know, for the New York Mets this year?
And now Wainwright is ineligible to start that game, too. Because I guess
that's
he has
right,
to start
yeah.
the day before. It just messes up with the rotation schedule that the Cards have. So he won't be starting in that All-Star game for the National League, which makes Harvey this great candidate for his home ball club playing at Citi Field for the All-Star game. Just makes all the sense in the world right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. I think it's going to happen.
Probably will. Now, how about you, CJ, what you've done now in the last year or so? You played a role in the movie 42, a biographical sports film which told all about the life of the man who broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball, number 42, Jackie Robinson. And fittingly, it came out on April 12th of this year, the day on which the ballplayers of all 30 Major League Baseball clubs honor his legacy by wearing Robinson's number on the back of their jerseys. So talk about that movie, what you did for it, and how you got that role lined up for yourself.
You know, it was just something that kind of fell in my lap, to be quite honest with you. They were looking for extras in the movie. Someone asked me to do it. I was in the area. I live in Atlanta. They were shooting in Chattanooga. I agreed to do it. And then as I was meeting the casting people, they said, hey, we want you to read for a role, and then asked me to offer me the role of pitcher Dutch Leonard, who was a pitcher for the Philadelphia Phillies at the time. And I got a line in the movie. Got to face Jackie's character a few times and got a pretty decent amount of screen time in it. And, yeah, it was a blast. It was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed it. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me and probably a one-and-done for my Hollywood career. But
You're never acting again, CJ? You won't take on the big screen again in your lifetime?
I doubt it. I mean, it's a lot of work, and you got to be in the right place, and it's a really difficult lifestyle. It's really not what I'm interested in, but it was a lot of fun. Like I said, and really enjoyed the experience.
So going into the future, what will you be doing about 5 years from now in your imagination? Will it be broadcasting for a sports network, covering Major League Baseball games, or college games, or maybe both? What's your take on that as well?
I mean, ideal situation for me is that I would probably be either doing color for someone full-time, whether it's radio or television, you know, possibly doing, you know, a network job, a studio job. Right now I work for MLB.com. I do a lot of their video on demand stuff and other shows that they have. Host a show on Saturdays for CBS Sports Network, for CBS Sports Radio, that I'm doing right now once a week. That's been going pretty well. I'm really enjoying that experience. I fill in for MLB Network Radio. I'm a fill-in host for them, which is on Sirius XM. And
mm-hmm.
So I've been fortunate, and I've done some writing for ESPN.com. I'm going to start writing some more for switch over and write for MLB.com going forward. But it has been, I've been really fortunate. I've been really blessed. I've had a lot of opportunities in the media since I retired, basically the spring training, and continue and hopefully will continue to be, stay in this business. I really enjoy it. It's been a ton of fun.
And what do you like doing the most, CJ? Is it the digital media platform, the radio show, the studio analyst position? What would you say is your favorite thing to do?
You know, I think I'm most comfortable on radio. I think we have the most fun on radio. It's I really enjoy that. I think that's the most natural fit for me. But if I had my choice, I think I'd be really strong in color. I did one thing I didn't mention. I did about 6 college games this spring for CBS Sports Network on television, and got my first taste of doing color television, and that was a lot of fun. I think if I could be really good at one thing, that would probably be it. And I'd love to get locked in with the team and be a guy who could stick around for a really long time. It's kind of the ultimate goal, but you just kind of go where your career takes you, and you have to look at your strengths and identify them and be honest with yourself on what your strengths are. And right now I think radio is it. I would hope that long-term color will become it.
Well, CJ, thanks for the MLB insight today on 5 Wide Sports Live. Have a good one.
Enjoyed it. Good talking to you. Thank you. You too.
Yep. Thank you to Mr. CJ Nikowski, former MLB pitcher, and all things broadcasting now, doing color for some games, for some college baseball games from this past season. Also doing some work for MLB.com and possibly writing now for MLB.com and writing for ESPN.com in the past about all things baseball. A great baseball and sports mind in CJ Nikowski. Thanks to him once again. And thank you to all the listeners who tuned in today to the second episode of 5 Wide Sports Live with me and guest Lauren Beasley of Sports Talk with Lauren Beasley on Blog Talk Radio, as well as the aforementioned CJ Nikowski, lending his insight on the MLB almost at the All-Star break. Thanks for listening, everyone, once again, and have a great weekend. I'll talk to you next Saturday morning at the time of 11:30, back to the normal time slot of 11:30 to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If anything happens with the time slot, I will update you guys all on Twitter. Follow me at Vito Jerome. Thank you very much. Have a good one. Goodbye.